Hello, and welcome to From the Rickering. My name's John, and we're not going to be at Sheffield Wednesday. This podcast will discuss Watford's home game at Sheffield Wednesday, but I'm currently sat in Heathrow Terminal 2. Was maybe Terminal 5, but it's in 2. With me, DCW.
Hello.
And Mike.
Okay, let's go.
Mike, we're in Terminal 2 on our way to Stockholm. We weren't almost going to do that today. We were chipper this morning. No, we were planning our visit to go, thanks to you guys organising it for my birthday. But it wasn't a straightforward afternoon, was it?
It wasn't, no. So we're due to fly to Stockholm for a weekend of football and fun. And just as we were about to leave, the taxi was literally outside my house. And I checked WhatsApp, and there was a picture from Dave who'd sent a screenshot of the flight status, and our flight had been cancelled, which sent our plans into immediate disarray. My life flashed before my eyes. I was so gutted.
I went. I don't know what that means. And what, can we go? Is there a later one? I don't know. It's never happened to me before.
I saw you questioning what it means. And what cancelled means, John, is that it's not, the flight isn't happening. And basically, we're going away for the weekend. We're going to the Stockholm Derby, Djurgårdens against Hammarby on Sunday, and there's a big Hammarby women's game on Saturday. Then the footballing gods have combined perfectly for this weekend, close to your birthday. Everything had worked out. Everything had come up roses in the planning. And then, what, 2 or 3 hours out, the bloody thing gets cancelled. Very Watfordy. It probably serves us right for giving Watford a swerve in probably what's arguably their biggest game of the season so far. Certainly Valerian Ismail's biggest game. But luckily, I turned on a bit of the charm on the phone to BA, and we were able to get rebooked onto a flight an hour later. So, yeah, we bought ourselves a bit of time. We're in the pub having a beer and having a debrief already. We're expecting to have a debrief on sort of Monday morning, but it already feels like we've sort of been out and about doing already, because we've been through the ringer already. But yeah, an exciting weekend in prospect.
Dave, was the point when it looked like things were weren't going to make it to Stockholm, we weren't going to make this weekend away, that you got excited about seeing Watford against Sheffield Wednesday?
Yeah, I was mentally thinking, right, okay, so what are we going to do? We're not going to get there tonight. We can't fly tomorrow because we've missed all the stuff we'd planned for. I was preparing myself to go to Vicarage Road tomorrow, just sort of accept that as a reality. But thankfully, yeah, it's all turned out fine.
Yeah, but we did, I met you at Euston, we did a bit of a footballing, sort of passing by.
Yeah, we did. A former Watford player walked 2 metres past you. You looked him right in the face. You had no idea who he was. No recollection, John, has of Johnny Jackson, the current AFC Wimbledon manager, playing for Watford, which he did do on loan from Spurs back when he was a young player. Yeah, the whole AFC Wimbledon squad walked past us on the way to get the train to their game in Barrow.
Barrow in Fergie.
Yeah, which I think is probably a longer journey than we've got today.
It could have been where we ended up as well if things had things haven't panned out as they were. But yeah, looking forward to it. It's weird, isn't it? Because you feel like you're cheating on Watford a little bit.
Yeah,
it's a big game. They need Vicarage Road needs to be bouncing. It needs to be vibrant.
Yeah. Ollie Wicken always message our little group. We always meet at the railway arm before a game. He said, "Is everyone meeting there beforehand?" We went, "No, we're off to Stockholm," and he referred to it as a six-pointer. A six-pointer.
They'll be having a six-pointer. We'll be having a six-pointer.
The big question is, right, so tomorrow afternoon, Sweden's an hour ahead. We will be the second half of our game, the Hammarby women's game that we're going to attend, which is a big game, big title deciding clash for them, potentially. So we'll be there when Watford kick off against Sheffield Wednesday. Are we going to dip into Hive Live? Are we going to have it there on the phone? I am tempted.
Now you say that. Well, like you say, we'll get team news from Watford at the beginning of the first half. And then I think maybe when the game we're watching is finished. But what we are going to do is we're going to ask all the other From the Rickenders, Jason and Geordie and Colin, and they're going to hopefully send us some updates, but you know, high quality updates, not just the Twitter updates. So we'll be able to hear those and what's going on. Use the power of, you know, the voice message, and that's, we'll basically this podcast is going to be the story of our weekend going away, trying our best to follow Watford, trying our best to experience a different country's footballing culture.
It's a big risk, though, because if we really enjoy this podcasting in Sweden, it's pretty inexpensive to get over for the weekend, non-cancelled flights notwithstanding. We could end up being from the Södermalm end or something like that. We could decide that it's better, more fun podcasting from Scandinavia. So it's a bit of a gamble.
Well, but I think the good thing is, though, we could really have two clubs, because this is the
it's a great idea. I'm up for that.
this is going to be the 27th game out of 30 or something like that. So it's right near the end of, you know, the Scandinavian seasons, because they always do it through the summer. So it's quite easy. We could have a little side show podcast for a Swedish football team. But anyway, we're at Heathrow.
It's probably best you don't put on record that you've got a Swedish bit on the side, John. be my
the wife doesn't listen to the podcast. She never does. So we're waiting for our flight off to Sweden, off to Stockholm, this is what the podcast will all be about. And you join us on Saturday now. we find us now in a bar in Stockholm. And don't think we've spent the whole time in bars in Stockholm. We've just seen some pomp and ceremony, haven't we, Dave?
Yeah, we've seen the changing of the guard at the Royal Palace in Stockholm, which, if anyone's been to the changing of the guard in London, Buckingham Palace or Horse Guards Parade, it's in London it's just two blokes. One bloke comes out, the other one goes in. It was about half an hour, the brass band, there was about 50 different troops, there was a bloke who read out a big load of information about seven different languages. We were behind a rope. It was a spectacle, I'll say that, but it was a bit bloody cold.
Yeah, we're not looking forward to the cold, are we, later on, Michael?
No, we're not looking forward to the changing of the guard at Vicarage Road when Watford lose this afternoon against Sheffield Wednesday as well. it's great. Really, really cold. We've huddled up in a bar, taking stock ahead of our first football match of the weekend, which is Hammarby Women against Linköping in a top-of-the-table clash. So looking forward to that. We'll head back to the apartment, layer up a little bit. I think we've all underclubbed it slightly. Obviously, Stockholm, lots of water, lots of open spaces. So that wind, that Baltic wind whipping in is chilling us to our core. But it's making us feel alive, isn't it?
We went to a comic book store at one point and you found a sign, Mike, didn't you? Was it Sweden Hornet?
Yeah. We were drawn into it, weren't we? And there was that sign, yeah.
And the question is, how many Swedish Hornets can you name? I think there are five.
Ekstrand.
Yeah.
Matthias Rinnegi?
Yes. But do you know, he was on loan to from Watford to Djurgårdens in 2016. So he was a Watford player. You're missing the big one.
Ken. King Ken.
King Ken, yeah. I'd like to say no. All my names are coming from the Watford archive.
Right.
So there's my source.
So we've got King Ken, we've got Matthias Rinnegi, we've got Joel Ekstrand. Mm.
I'll give you another clue. He was a loan player to Watford, but not from a Swedish club, under Sean Dyche.
Oh, Alexander Kacaniklić.
Correct, Amanda. Oh, yeah, who did play for Hammarby in 2019. I did look this up. It's not my memory. There's one more, and from a very long time ago. Begins with P.
What does your surname or first name?
First name. I'll put you out of your misery, boys. Didn't play many games. Per Ole Ljung. And as you can tell, in the last 24 hours, I haven't really picked up how to speak Swedish.
Maybe if you put a bit of one of those snuff pockets in your mouth, you'd all of a sudden start being able to pronounce it. Well, I think that's four and a half players, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really. It's sort of a vague, it's not really a rich seam of Swedish Hornets running through history, is there? But nice that we've got a couple of Djurgården and Hammarby players who we're obviously going to be seeing tomorrow. So nice link.
Yes.
Well done, John.
By the way, how old are you feeling today, Mike? Because, or this week even? Could you see that the good old Sean Murray is 30?
Yeah, I'm feeling very old, and happy birthday, Sean. Happy birthday, Sean Murray. One that didn't quite hit the heights, did he? A bit like Per Ole Ljung.
But that's it. Dave, did you feel like, I always feel like with Murray, those players that we've had who We did it, jovially said on the podcast very early on, it was a classic Murray where he would smash a ball in from outside the box, because he was like one of the first youth players we saw with clips on YouTube. But do you think he suffered and we didn't get to see the best of him in a Watford shirt because of when the Pozzos turned up?
Possibly. He certainly went from being one of the main men in that Dyche team, one of the most exciting players, to being surrounded by all sorts of different players and had to work his way into that team. And he had injuries as well during that season, but he did play a reasonable amount of football under Zola. Zola's clearly trusted him, and he was still in the team as well, I think, in the second season when Zola got sacked, you know, after the poor start. So he had a chance, and I remember, I think Adam Leventhal did a piece with him for The Athletic a few years back, and, you know, it was a classic tale of a player who promised much, delivered a little bit, but for various reasons just lost his way, whether that was down to him or external factors, probably a bit of both. But a shame, really, because a career that probably should have returned more than what it did.
Well, you never know, you might. Is he playing the Champions League from when he's in Ireland? He's on above Watford if he's doing that, surely. But yeah, we're heading back into the, not quite blistering, but it is pretty bare, pretty chilly outside, but we've cooped up in a nice, well, it's definitely, this is the first pub we've been in today. Is to classify the pub?
Oh, this is your classic Irish pub, yeah. Yeah. If you're ever in need of somewhere to go in a unfamiliar city, you find the Irish pub, and it will usually do you a decent job. And this one's very nice indeed.
So we'll be back later on when we head our way to top of the table Hammarby women's game. Yeah, later on this afternoon, Ben.
It's second v third, though, isn't it? So is that a top of the table clash? I think we have discussed this on the Football Clichés podcast before. I think it does just about qualify as top of the table clash, although I personally don't quite like it for a second v third.
Well, it's a 6-pointer, though.
Well, that's a whole other thing, is it?
Yeah. There's ramifications at the top of the table. How about that?
Yeah, perfect.
Could be it. Wide in. No. How have we got it, Dave? We're in now. Hammarby's women's game today. What? Oh, this is a little bit different from Vicarage Road.
Certainly is. What do you reckon? 2,500 here, maybe? I think.
Yeah, about that.
It's packed. And it's a big game. It's Hammarby, who I think started the game in second, but a point would see them go top because they play ahead of the team that's currently top. Oh. And nope. Linköping are third. So basically winner goes top with, I think, only four or five games before the end of the season. The bookies have Hammarby as heavy, heavy favourites.
And it seems that way so far.
It does seem that way so far. They've had all the possession. They look slightly more accomplished. But it's a sort of tricky atmosphere, I think, for the away team here. But keeper's giving it away. Oh. There's a chance there. The Hammarby number 9 does look dangerous. But it's very much like a sort of packed non-league game that you'd see in England. You know, maybe like Dulwich Hamlet or something.
Hey, you don't have that noise
from the crowd
at Dulwich Hamlet, do you?
No, not quite as much as this. No. There's a few more people not watching the football and drinking IPA at Dulwich Hamlet than this. And we've just got a bottle of Carlsberg.
Yeah.
We stood just behind the goal and we're having a lovely time.
Yeah. Mike, we've seen the Watford team. Not extraordinary, I suppose. Livermore cementing his start after a great performance previously. Inch starting, that sort of more mature head ahead of Asprilla.
Yeah, I mean, look, the issues we've got are multiple, aren't they? Defensively, we've struggled. But I think for me, all season long, the real issue has been scoring goals. And I think of all our strikers, Bayo has at least made himself look the most likely of the one to score. To ask questions of the defence is what I always look for. Sting the hands of the opposition goalkeeper. He's a, well, getting a shot off, we would have to do that. But he buzzes around. He makes that difficult. Tom Ince probably got something to prove since he's come in. Hasn't really managed to cement himself.
No way.
A chance here.
No. Oh, cleared by Hammerby.
I think Thomas Ince will probably have Thomas Ince. That's what he
looks like. No, I was about to say, I love the fact you called him Thomas Ince. That gives him a certain level of maturity and seriousness, which is exactly what we need from him today.
I think he'll have something to prove. Likewise, Mateus Martins, probably our best player, I would say, at the moment on form this season. So that front three, we need them to click. Yeah. We need them to create something. Sheffield Wednesday come into the game needing something. How big is the new manager bounce going to be? It's an interesting appointment from them, so they'll be sort of freshened up a little bit by that. How sort of jaundiced will they be from their start, which has been bad? So this is a big game for Watford. It's a real opportunity for Watford to kick start their season and to hopefully start drawing away from the wrong end of the table. But we have to make do with what we've got. And if you look at, I look for those front three. That's where the game is going to be won or lost for me. Can they click? Can they ask questions of the defence? Can we score? And I think if Watford can get amongst them, score early, then it'll be difficult for Sheffield Wednesday. But we're watching a big game here in Sweden. It's a massive game at Vicarage Road. Let's hope Val's got them sorted and they turn up.
Yep, well, we'll see what happens. Or you will, if anyone at the game, will see what happens. We've got, of course, the FGRE family over there. Katie, Jason, Colin, Geordie are there. And they're going to send us some WhatsApp messages throughout the game to find out how things are going at Vicarage Road, so we know what's going on. We will be swiping down to refresh Twitter, to refresh our feeds, to find out what's going on. We're 12, 13 minutes into this game, still 0-0, but all the play still with Hammerby.
20 minutes in, 0-0 against Sheffield Wednesday, and we might be playing till Wednesday before we see a goal, because there's not been a shot on target yet. Wednesday seem happy to press us when we try to play out from the back. They're confident that we can't break through them, and so far that confidence has proven well founded. Things of note, really, in a very boring game so far. 8 out of the 11 Watford players are wearing 1-11. They've got George Byers, an academy product, on the bench, and Sheffield Wednesday has the same amount of syllables as Wolverhampton, so we're getting the same Jeff Beck and Frankie Valli renditions from the Wednesday fans. It's raining here. It's not a great game if you're missing it. Very, very Championship, really. Both teams passing it around, but not really making any great progress. So fingers crossed it gets better.
Upgrade from Geordie there, DCW. Not really surprising. Nothing really happened at Vicarage Road. It's raining there. It's raining here also, but just a little bit. We put a bet on this as a collective. A 3-1 home win. It's 1-0 to the Hammerbees. Hammerbees, is that the right word?
It might be. It's 1-0 to Hammerbee.
Yeah, Hammerbees sound like an indie band. Anyway, hang on.
No. It's been a bit of a more of a spirited showing from the away side in the second half. They haven't looked better. They've missed a couple of gilt-edged chances. But it does feel like Hammerby are quite comfortable. We'll probably see this one out. I imagine 1-0. Maybe they'll get another one on the break or something if Lincoln can push for an equaliser in the last minute. But all in all, it does sound like there's more happening here than at Vicarage Road.
That bloke over there singing is more than most at Vicarage Road.
Yeah. Honestly, I mean, we were laughing, but, and you know, obviously things aren't going well at the moment, not just to today, but in general at Vicarage Road. But there's what, 2,500 people here at Hammerby, with Hammerby Women against Linkoping Women? More atmosphere here than you ever get at the bloody Vic.
Well, yeah, it does feel that way the last few years. Let's say. So, yeah, we'll see this game out, really, I think. 20 minutes, 23 minutes gone. Yeah, good day, Dave.
Yeah, Hammerby.
Don't know all the words. But we've had a couple of beers. They've got like a cottage in the corner, like Fulham would have.
It's the Hammerby Hutch.
I thought there was rabbits inside it, Dave. Again, close for the away side. This game is not over yet. Watford, so let's see what the other guys have got to tell us as the game goes on. Okay, Dave, we are in extra time, about 30 seconds ago, maybe, in the additional minutes.
Haven't had a shot.
So unfortunately, it's 1-1.
Yeah, as the clock was ticking down, seemingly petering out to 1-0 Hammerby win, and I tapped you on the shoulder, wanted to get a photo of you in front of the pitch to commemorate the birthday occasion here. Linkoping have equalised. Scored a goal out of nowhere to make it 1-1. So.
Out of nowhere? They've been far more pushing the second half.
Yeah, they have been. Well, they're on the attack here. They could get a winner here. Oh, frantic finish here at the Hammerby IP Stadium. Yeah, it's 1-1, but I think a point still puts Hammerby top, because the team that started the day in first are yet to play. So I think they're playing either tomorrow or at some point later in the week. So Hammerby are top. They are top. Final whistle, it's 1-1.
Well, we've had an update here. Well, that's our update from here. What was half-time at Watford?
Do you know what this reminds me of, actually? Reminds me of a very similar occasion at Vicarage Road once, when Sheffield Wednesday came to Vicarage Road and scored a goal in the last minute to dampen everyone's day.
Not quite the same consequences, Dave. Not quite the same consequences. So what's going on at Vicarage Road?
So, half-time here at Vicarage Road, it is Watford 0, Sheffield Wednesday 0. The team have just been booed off. I'm not one for doing that, but you can completely understand why, because absolutely nothing has happened. We're up against a Sheffield Wednesday team. Okay, they've got a new manager, perhaps a new bit of belief, but they don't actually look that good. But they've not had to do anything to stop us from playing, because we've been extremely poor. Ngaki's put a couple of crosses into the box that we've either not been able to get on the end of or not had a decent chance on the end of it, but neither goal has been tested. You get a feeling that it's one of those games that's going to be settled by a well-executed set piece. We've not been able to do that well at all. I think we had a corner that didn't beat the man at the near post, surprise, surprise, and a free kick that swung in, went all the way over everyone's heads and disappeared at the back post. Really poor. Sheffield Wednesday have had a couple and have tried to make something from second balls. They look more likely to score from a set piece. Neither side looks likely to score otherwise, because it's been a pretty poor game. Wednesday continue to try and press us, put us under pressure. Again, that's telling, because we'll play a few passes around. It's been a bit slow, a bit pedestrian, and eventually someone will play a pass out of play. Wesley Hoot's left foot seems to have deserted him. Forget the crossfield balls. He's putting 20-yard passes out of play at the moment. It's just not really good. And you just feel like it's one of those games where they'll nick a goal and we just won't have an answer to it. And we're going to go away disappointed again. Just got to hope that it turns out to be completely different in the second half.
Hour gone here at Vicarage Road, and it still remains Watford 0, Sheffield Wednesday 0. Only positive update that I can give is that Watford are not behind after Sheffield Wednesday were initially awarded a penalty. Jamal Lewis making a challenge in the box on Sheffield Wednesday winger Anthony Musaba. Referee initially gave a penalty, much to the disgust of Watford supporters. But after a discussion with his linesman, overturned the decision. It was the right decision, because Jamal Lewis clearly got the ball. But not a great start to the second half for Watford. It's been all Sheffield Wednesday. Jeff Hendrick, a few moments before the penalty decision, had a header from a free kick that went just over the bar. Watford really haven't had any kind of opportunity of note in this second half. Clearly Valerian Ismaël wasn't happy with that first half. He brought on Rajovic and Ismaël Kone at half time for Bayo and for Tom Delibashiru, and just a few moments ago we saw Ken Semmer come on for Jamal Lewis just after that penalty decision. Not much else to report. Watford haven't had an opportunity this second half, so remains after an hour, Watford 0, Sheffield Wednesday 0.
Mikhail. We finished at Hammerby 1-1, as we know. Found a Brewdog. Went in Stockholm, came to Brewdog, warming up a little bit, getting out the rain. Do you see all those? When you see those subs, we heard from everybody, and like, we're hearing the subs, and we're seeing what Val's doing. Kieran's are not happy. It's more than that, isn't it?
We said before the game that this was a really important occasion for Watford to step up and try and pull themselves away from the effectively what is a relegation battle against what would be a relegation rival, a team that most people have given up on. In terms of most sort of commentators and average fans would say that Sheffield Wednesday are as good as relegated. Watford are at home to them after an international break, and that our hope was, not being there, that they would step up and, like I said, we'd see a bit of activity from those forward players, and we'd ask questions of the opposition. And evidently, from what we're hearing from Vicarage Road, I mean, it's raining here in Stockholm, but it sounds like it's pouring in terms of the negativity, quite frankly, swirling around Vicarage Road. And it's so disappointing to hear that it's a sort of... It feels like it should be a springboard after an international break, and it feels again like it's come down to Valerian Ismaël having to throw players on. And obviously I'm not there, but not with any real tactical idea of where they're going to fit in and how they're going to change the game.
Not a plan B?
It almost feels like, and the West Bromwich Albion supporters have sort of often said, it often felt like they were rugby substitutions in as much as they're a fresh pair of legs to come on. And to hope that a fresh pair, you know, that's the sort of thing that I would say as let's freshen it up, let's throw a fresh pair of legs on. And I'm not a football manager for a reason. The ultimate concern is we've been talking over the last 24-48 hours while we've been away about the Watford squad, haven't we? And it's, does anyone have any faith in the players? And you mentioned, John, how we want Martins, and I said myself before the game, we want Martins to step up, we want Ince to step up, but what actually needs is more than that. We need better players performing better, and what we've currently got is average players, really, which should be fine. Is fine in this division, but they're not performing as a team. They're not performing as a unit, and increasingly it looks like Valerian Ismaël is unable to turn them around. And I guess the big question is he asking too much of them? So from the start of the season,
did the manager not have to always ask more of you?
It's the press. Yeah, he has to ask for the best. He has to want the best, and he has to have a vision, and he has to want to implement that. And we saw that at the start of the season, and we were all enthused by it, because this is the way Watford are going to play. It's not always going to work. We're going to come under pressure. We're going to make mistakes. This is going to happen. That's going to happen. There'll be good days. There'll be bad days. But we were willing to take that. But over the weeks and months it is now since the start of the season, that has just dissipated. The style of play is no more. The intensity is no more. And there's no real faith, I don't think, in any of this Watford squad to come on and make a difference. So your original question was about the subs. And it's like, it feels like a roll of the dice, which I guess any sub is, because football's chaos. We don't know what's going to happen.
No, but we're in another country looking what they've done, who's changed, and we're not quite sure where those changes and what they're trying to do. And you sort of do want to know that. You want to, if a team and a club is all together and organised, if you say, Ken's coming on,
well,
that'd be the thing. And it's great that Ken's coming on, because we're in Sweden.
And it's, well, not just that we're in Sweden, but I think Ken Semmer has been one of the player that we've missed probably the most. And fall into the same trap as every football supporter. The solution is a player that's not available. Yeah. We always fall back on that. But Ken Semmer, King Ken Semmer, just looking around to see if anyone anyone sort of picked their ears up when I mentioned him, they didn't, is a very, very good championship footballer. And he is someone that potentially could knit the he can't knit them together, can he? I'm clutching at straws.
And valleys.
But he's someone who can potentially give them a lift. Because he can get forward. We've watched the Beckham documentary, and Dave was made the point earlier
by the way, the minute you said we were watching the Beckham documentary, Dave's head is going. He gave us a look going, how are you linking David Beckham with the current Watford squad?
Well, Ken Semmer, of course, famously dated Victoria Adams before. He absolutely didn't. Oh, as far as I know, he might have done. I mean, if anyone can, King Ken can.
It was the other Spice Girls.
But he's underrated, effectively. Dave was saying that Beckham scored a lot of goals. He did a lot of good work on the pitch. He scored goals from not just free kicks. And Ken Semmer's underrated. And what he does, he works in all three thirds of the pitch. So he can make things happen, and he can raise the sort of decibel level in the crowd. He can sort of, hopefully, sort of lead by example a little bit. He plays like a... In ice hockey, which is massive over here in Sweden, they have vice captains. So he plays almost like a vice captain in terms of that role, sort of a bit of rallying. And I think he's important to have back. But for us to be pinning our hopes on Ken coming back and sort of turning the whole thing round is a bit of a stretch. And it just feels like the whole thing is very... It just feels like it's slipping. It feels like we're being sort of carried downstream, sort of inexorably, just slowly but surely, like a bit of abandoned sort of...
Poo sticks.
Yeah, effectively, just no one knows how to stem that tide.
Yeah.
Whether it's Valerian Ismail, whether it's Pozzo with the signings or complete lack of them. And as supporters, I think we all feel at a loss. We've been at Hammarby this afternoon. Hammarby women, I think, 3,000, 3,500? Absolutely supporting their team in the driving rain throughout. And I think as Watford supporters, we feel unable to do that at the moment. We don't feel like we've got anything to cling on to, apart from the fact we're Watford fans and we will always want our team to win. But what are we supposed to be cheering? What are we supposed to be enjoying? What are we supposed to be getting behind? It's so hard to see that. And it just feels like... a slow decline is happening. It feels like there's a train trundling along at about 3 miles an hour, and in about 4 or 5 months that train's going to run out of track, and no one's got any idea how to stop it. We've got plenty of time to stop that train before it run out of track, but it feels like I can already see the end frame of the film.
Dave, when you listen to what Mike said to say there, the fact that Valerian's got this new contract, the fact that Ben Manga's on his way out, and everything seems to be on more and more press releases, you name it, seems to be on Valerian. And the ability or the desire to change, of course, and to turn things around, it doesn't necessarily feel like a Gino thing. Does it feel like a thing you're happy with, the fact that he's going to be this man to not necessarily turn it around and throw us up the league, but to even make it good?
Well, I think if you want to defend him, you have to say that he's working with a demonstrably limited squad. But as you've discussed just now, there are some signs increasingly that has he got it right? Does he know what he's doing? Like the subs, chucking on the subs every game, like it for whatever reason, whether it's his fault or not, it's obviously taken a quite sharp downward turn since the sort of first international break, really. And it's concerning. And, it doesn't feel... I mean, I think Mike's bang on. It feels like we are just sort of trundling our way to disaster at the moment. And we were all positive at the start of the season, and everyone tries to be positive at the start of the season. Put your best foot forward and try and hope for the best. But the reality is now becoming clear that not only are we not even an average championship side, we're a poor championship side, and we're down the bottom of the table, struggling to beat the team who have been pretty hapless this season, the bottom of the league, Sheffield Wednesday. And there's, as we speak, there's 20 minutes or so left, so maybe we can squeak a win, who knows? But it's pretty desperate at the moment.
I think obviously we talk about the team, and obviously we talk about Valerian Ismail. They're the ones that turn up, they're the ones that front up on a Saturday afternoon to do the job, to do what we want, to do what we are, why we're supporters, to play the game. But the bigger question, and I think it's remiss of us not to caveat every conversation with this, is that the squad that has been provided this year is, we knew straight away it wasn't going to challenge, certainly. We hoped it would be good enough to be in the middle of the table, but evidently it's not. It is a very, very thin championship squad with deficiencies in every part of the pitch. Every part of the pitch there are huge, huge question marks. And so we can talk about Valerian Ismail, we can talk about the substitutions, we can talk about why Mateus Martins isn't performing as well, we can talk about how Ken Stemmer is a decent championship footballer. But ultimately, the question that needs answering is, why is the squad like it is? Why is it so threadbare? Why is it so devoid of effectively talent that is able to be competitive in championship football matches? And that answer has to come from the top. That's where the sights really should be trained. Not on Valerian Ismail, because any manager that comes into Watford at this stage is going to have his fallibilities. Any manager that comes into Watford at this stage is going to be taking it because he hasn't got a better offer, quite frankly. And it, ultimately, he's been asked to make a sort of, not a silk purse, but what's close to, like a faux silk purse out of a sow's ear. And I think the questions have to be asked, why are Watford in this situation with this squad of players, with this group of players, where we're just so thin, threadbare, and ultimately unable to compete in the championship? So that has to be the overarching thing, yeah, that hangs over this whole season. Whatever happens, why have we ended up here?
Yeah.
And how have we ended up here? And what are the answers? Why? Is there no money? Is there no desire to invest anymore? What is going on? That's the big question, because previously we have invested, previously we've hung on to players perhaps too long. Now the tap's been turned off. What does that mean? What does it mean, and what does it mean for the future of the football club? That's the biggest issue.
We sit here every week and discuss the games and pick them apart and talk about the players, but actually, as we always keep coming back to, Michael, as we discuss these things, is there are some bigger, much important questions which we thought we were going to try and get some answers from Mr. Gino Pozzo in the summer. They didn't, and in fact they've become even more focused.
But what we need to do is just keep asking the question, and I think as supporters everyone needs to be asking the question. Yeah, the most important thing is what happens on the pitch, because that's your 3 o'clock as a football supporter. Your 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon is the most important time of the week. That's when it all happens. That's when you pay your money, they cross the white line, and that's what being a football supporter is watching your bloody team play. So we will obviously focus on that, but we need to keep asking ultimately what the hell has happened and what the hell is going on up there.
Inside the last 10 minutes, and I'm pleased to report that it is Watford 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0. Said earlier that we haven't had much to get positive about, with very few chances. Well, the introduction of Yasser Asprilla has changed that. A great ball from Ismail Kone from the middle of the park set him away down on the right-hand side. He cut in, ran past a few players on the edge of the box, and then tucked the ball into the corner past Sheffield Wednesday goalkeeper Dawson. It was going to take a bit of magic or something, a mistake possibly, to separate the two teams. It's a bit of magic from Yasser Asprilla. A few minutes left, it's Watford 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0.
So, walking back from the game, 3 points. That's quite nice for me, because I missed the Birmingham game, so I was away. So that's actually the first time I've seen us win since opening day of the season. Obviously, the joy of that game probably replaced with maybe a little bit of pessimism, because it wasn't a great game. It wasn't till the second half, until the GOAT that is Ken Stemmer came on, where we actually looked like we knew what we were trying to do. We were sort of using that left-hand side and the sort of triangles between Georgi Chakvetadze, Mathias Martins and Ken Stemmer. I thought worked quite well. We were causing a lot of trouble down the left with those. Ken was looking to get forward, and we actually started to play a bit more positive, which was nice. It sort of came on the back of that penalty, non-penalty decision. which you'd thought with that decision we might have then sort of got ourselves together, got a grip of the game. But really, Sheffield Wednesday took control of the game from that point for the next sort of 5-10 minutes, and it sort of took us a while to get out of a funk there. But once we did, we were the more dominant team. Not sure whether we deserved it or not, but you know, we did. We took our chance, which they didn't. No one really created anything, did they? I was saying, yeah, I thought it would take a set piece maybe to win the game. Actually, it was two moments of magic. Great from Asprilla, the run and the shot. But we absolutely need to give Kone credit for that pass as well. It was a brilliant ball down the right hand side that set Asprilla away. I said feeling a little bit pessimistic. However, I've just seen a load of messages come through from an old work friend who's a Sheffield Wednesday fan, telling me how they battered us today. He's never seen a penalty given rightly and then turned over by a linesman wrongly. How they imposed themselves, how very lucky we were today. So actually, that's cheered me up. Sorry, mate, but you're going to get all stroppy about it. Bad loser. Oh, dear, bless you, mate. That has cheered me up. Come on, you Horns.
So full-time here at Vicarage Road, and it is Watford 1, or should I say Yas Asprilla 1, Sheffield Wednesday 0. What an extraordinary game of football. it's what clichés are made for, really, because it was a game of two halves. Although I thought Sheffield Wednesday were equally poor in both halves, we were sort of not at the races. It's so strange, isn't it? We played at such a slow tempo in the first half. Deli Bashiro and Imran Luza didn't really look like they were at it. Ince was kind of wandering around, and Martins wasn't really getting on the ball much. And Bio, I don't, there's no point. Anyway, on comes Rajovic, and eventually on comes Kone, and then he brings on Chak, and he brings on Sema. And suddenly, in the second half, after about 10 minutes, we start playing a completely different tempo. And I don't understand how that happens, and I'm not sure coaches do or players do, but we just suddenly were at it. Ince looked like a completely different player in the second half. He wanted the ball. He was cutting inside. He was finding good areas with the ball. And Gakia was getting beyond him for the first time. I don't know if the manager put a rocket up them or something, or whether they just sort of collectively decided to have it. But we looked completely different. Sheffield Wednesday were under the cosh. They were going back and back and back. And Rajovic, despite his shortcomings, did in fact give the two Sheffield Wednesday centre-backs something to think about, which Bio hadn't. They had a very easy first half, and the second half, suddenly they were having to manage a big lad who was determined. And Sema, of course, is a hero, really. He's a Watford hero. He's not quite a legend, but I'd say he's a hero. And he made a big difference. Kone was unbelievable. I mean, he was really the catalyst. And I have to say, I thought Livermore had a really good game. He's playing in that position where you don't really notice what he's doing. But in the second half, again, you could see he was sniffing danger. He was covering tracks. We were keeping the ball. But instead of just keeping it aimlessly in our own half, we were actually using the ball to get forward and get into places and put under pressure. And then the manager decides to take off Ince, which I was a bit like, Ince has been one of our best players in the last 20 minutes, to bring on a sprinter. And what happens? That's why I'm not a coach of a championship football team. He receives a brilliant pass. But for once, it looked like there was a Watford player who really had come on and caught the tempo of the game. And he just had the confidence to drive in. I thought he would turn it backwards or he would pass it to an overlapping Ngakia. But no, he just cut in. He pushed across the box. They wanted to tackle him, but they didn't. He passed one, he passed two. He got in between another player, and then he didn't catch it all that well, but the accuracy, and in it popped in the corner, and great scenes in the rookery. And then we seem to just be able to play the game out. So I don't know whether he starts the team that finished, but that team with Kone and Chak in the middle there and Sema out on the left or playing as a left fullback behind Martins but getting forward, and it's just whether Asprilla starts or whether he keeps him on the bench and starts Ince, because Ince did have a good second half until he came off. It's just like, can we start like that? Can we start with that tempo? Instead of playing for 45, 50 minutes, as it's awful slow tempo, lots of fear, passing it backwards, oh, I don't know if we're... Just put teams under pressure. Anyway, it's not long before we find out, because it's Tuesday. We're playing at the Liberty. I'm going. And now I feel more optimistic, and I'm looking forward to driving 200-400 miles, how far it is there and back, to watch Watford. But yeah, so all in all, some good signs. A dreadful first half from both teams, but particularly from us at home. Awful performance. But the manager got hold of the team, changed it, brought them through, and we got a win, and it was deserved. On second half performance, it was definitely deserved. Sheffield Wednesday showed nothing. They're definitely going to be in League One. And so might we. But who knows? That's football, John.
Well, that was the sound of us in the pub, the bar, before we have now made it to the Tele2 Arena. Dave, so it's a modern arena. You've got to go to many modern arenas in your time. World Cup, here they come. Beer Garden coming out with the boos and the whistles of the Hammersley fans. As a stadium experience, what do you think?
Yeah, it's quite nice. I was a little fearful that it would be just a sort of identical modern stadium, but it does have a little bit of character to it. And even though it's a lot bigger than this, but the kind of the way that it feels inside reminds me a little bit of the Brighton Stadium, Amex, because it's got like there's like a wall behind the seats where the seats don't go all the way up to the top because they obviously haven't filled it in yet. So I quite like it. Yeah.
And if we've got they've got the classic mic, or the, not the classic, sort of classic, but a retro classic. They've got standing areas.
Standing behind both goals. Djurgården and Hammarby share this arena. So as you say to Dave, we've got the Hammarby fans away to our left who are away fans in their home stadium, which must be a curious situation, but I guess they're used to it by now. But yeah, what are we, 45 minutes before kickoff? The Djurgården Terrace away to our right is pretty much full already. We met a couple of people in the pub before who had to leave early to get their place on that terrace. And yeah, it's good to see it, isn't it, really? Straight away, I think the atmosphere is elevated with a terrace. Obviously, it helps that this is a big derby game, Stockholm derby, so the atmosphere is always going to be good. But it just adds a little bit, doesn't it, when you've got that standing element. It's just conducive to making a bit more noise. It feels more, don't know what the word is, but it's but it's a tidy stadium. Benefits, I think, from the terracing at either end. Not one of those stadiums where there's clearly not a bad view in the place. We must say hello to Scott Atkinson and his son.
Yeah,
who we know listens to the podcast. He's here as well. We saw him in the pub.
Well, very cleverly, we're looking around for people, and Dave goes, "Oh, there's a Watford fan over there."
Of course there is.
Was it the badge, the secondary thing that he saw, Dave, wasn't it? What was the first thing he noticed?
I saw him over to our left, and I just noticed that there was the sportsbet.io or whatever. And I thought, we used to have that sponsor. And then, hang on a minute.
He's a Hornet.
That is us. Yeah.
We're massive. Watford are massive. Everywhere we go. 3 points out to Sheffield Wednesday. Now we're taking over Stockholm. Come on, you horns.
Yeah, actually, a morning after, we got to hear everything the boys had to say yesterday after that Watford win. I don't think it was a smash and grab, but, you know, it wasn't a great performance.
We're getting up today on Sunday with slightly sore heads, and I think it's fair to say that we weren't out celebrating a Watford performance, really, because, you know, we were very down when we spoke in the pub while the game was going on, because it felt like what it felt like, which is that this season is going to be a difficult one. And I think while a scrappy win at home to Sheffield Wednesday is absolutely vital, if we are going to be down the wrong end of the table, wins are going to be what we need. It doesn't matter how they come, whether it's 5-0, 1-0 in the 90th minute, whatever. We've got to start winning games, and to give them credit, they did that. But from everyone we've spoken to and everything we've heard, the performance is, whilst the 3 points are welcome, the performance is probably outweighs the concern for the performance outweighs almost the value of the 3 points. As we said yesterday, we needed something to build on. We've got that. Now somehow they're going to have to elevate themselves. As Hammarby come out here, you know, the whistles of the Djurgården fans and the Hammarby fans saluting their heroes in green and white. But yeah, it's nice to be here, to switch off from Watford, to be perfectly honest, because it feels like it's going to be a long, long, long slog, and I don't think yesterday will have changed anyone's minds in that regard.
We're at the airport now, getting a little trip home to London. What an atmosphere, Michael, that was. It was actually wonderful to have a break at half time because it was loud, it was leery, it was really leery, with all the tifos and the fireworks and just the constant noise that was going on from both ends of the stadium. It was a unique experience.
Yeah, it was a great experience. We were, as you heard earlier, very, very close to the Hammarby fans to our left, who you hear this phrase a lot, oh, they literally didn't stop singing throughout the game. Well, this lot literally didn't stop singing from minute one to minute, well, 103, as it turned out. All very, very well choreographed. They have the capos out at the front of the top tier and the bottom tier. And the deal is, if you're at a game like that in that area, you sing, and you sing in time, you sing loudly, and you sing for 90 minutes. And they did it. Yeah, I mean, it's interesting what's accepted in that football culture. Because so they had a three-part tifo. They had they had a home shirt. Then they turned the sort of panels over, and it created the away shirt, which is very clever in itself. And then just after the second half started, they had an amazing flare. Yeah. Display of these sort of flashing white flares that was absolutely incredible. I mean, the visual effect was stunning, and it was pretty, it was almost sort of otherworldly to be part of it, wasn't it? It's the sort of thing you see on sort of TVs and compilations. It's great to see it live, but then with fireworks comes smoke, and with those fireworks comes an awful lot of smoke. And pretty quickly after they set them off, it became apparent no one could see anything, including the ref, including the player, so off they toddled. But I think that is, it's all agreed in advance. They know it's going to happen, and I think the players know it's going to happen. Obviously, everything's set up to extinguish the flares when they go out and stuff. So it's a very, very different culture to what we're used to in England. The atmosphere is relentless, and that's great. That's great. And it doesn't stop you still do get the ebb and flow of when there's an attack. It gets louder and... So, yeah, tremendous, tremendous experience. The game, in a very Watfordy turn of events, did finish 0-0.
So. Dave, what do you think of the game?
The first half was quite good, actually.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah. And Djurgården's, the nominal home team for the fixture, should have won. They had one or two, well, definitely one, but maybe two or three very good chances in the first half. And the second half, though, I think really after the smoke break, when the players came back on after the smoke break, the game did, just much like the flares, the game sort of petered out, and just sort of eventually the light went out. And even in the sort of 110th minute, after when there was a lot of extra time because of smoke and a few injuries and stuff, I felt like neither team was really, really busting up to try and win it.
I think it took until the extra 13 minutes for Djurgården to actually, oh yes, now we can push a bit more and score a goal, which they've been doing the entire first half.
Yeah, it was interesting. So I asked you both towards the end of the game, do you think Watford would beat either of these teams? And you sort of, Mike, you said no, absolutely not. But I think they are probably sort of championship, middle championship standards, especially if you think, you look at the lack of quality up front in that game that we saw. There was lots of tidy players, few sort of internationals here and there who maybe have played sort of 20 odd times for Sweden or whatever, and are a bit older or whatever, but no sort of superstars and no real quality in the final third. And if you think that the team that separates Djurgårdens and Hammarby in the table at the moment, Djurgårdens are in fourth and Hammarby are in sixth, the team in fifth, Valletta, are the team that we bought Mileta Rajovic from. And the sort of players we saw today, if he was on the pitch today, he kind of would have fit in, I think, really. Sort of a try hard, do his best, but ultimately not that good. Yeah, it was interesting to watch it and try and work out where Watford would be.
Yeah.
Maybe we can move to the Allsven scan. That'd be fun.
Well, I think one thing, I think we probably where we would be better than them, or could have moments, as we saw yesterday against Sheffield Wednesday, you know, Espria doing something, Martin's doing something. There wasn't any player like, no one there seemed to be excited. They had one lad, didn't they, who was 17, and he sort of seemed exciting, but was incredibly, incredibly raw. So I reckon... if we played both those teams home and away,
I think we'd probably lose it on the terraces, because what we, you know, they've got 16 tons of pyro and tifo, and we've got Harry the Hornet.
No offence, Harry. We love you.
Wouldn't change it for the world. But yeah, it's an interesting thing, and we all do it, don't we? Whatever football we watch, we always compare it to Watford. How would we get on? Could we sign that sort of player? I wonder what would happen if one of our players played in this side. So yeah, it's a fascinating sort of fascinating thing to think about. But yeah, I still maintain they'd probably be Watford.
But it's funny, isn't it, though? We're sitting here talking about the atmosphere and tifos and fireworks displays and all that stuff. I'm not sure we've ever had many fireworks displays in Vicarage Road. Well, they used to have the fireworks, didn't they?
November. Except a classical music.
But not that long ago, and we had sort of tifos. You know, we had the famous Chino banner, and we did tifos. We've done stuff around Pride and Remembrance Day and all that stuff. So when the occasion calls for it, we can just about pull it out of the bag. But it's amazing to watch European football like that. And I've been to other countries in Europe where you've seen it as well, and it does put in perspective. Just, you know, I don't mean this disrespectfully at all, and I would count myself in this, sort of how maybe even subconsciously entitled we are as football fans in England and in, you know, in Scotland or whatever as well, because I think we turn up and kind of it felt like those fans that turned up today, regardless, as it turned out, was a 0-0 draw, but if it had been 5-5 or one of their teams had won 6-0, I think they would have celebrated in exactly the same way. They would have behaved in the same way the whole game. They turn up, they're going to sing their heart out, whereas we turn up and it's like, we might do if it's Luton or if we have a particularly exciting display in front of us that gets us out of our seats.
Yeah.
But otherwise, we sort of sit there with our arms crossed, kind of, go on then, get on with it.
Yeah, yeah. You do something and then I'll start cheering, but you have to help me. Well, then they're not. They're just doing everything they can to... Yeah, I mean, they were in early, weren't they? Like, just giving them a cheer when they were warming up and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, almost like they had, like, a little low-key little display with a couple of flags when they were doing the warm-up before they did the big thing as they came out.
I think that what they do is they support the badge, and that's it. So we were at Hammarby Women on Saturday, and there was, 3,000 people there in the bitterly cold day, in the pouring rain, supporting not necessarily that team, supporting the club, supporting the badge. And I think that's what the culture is, and that's what they expect of each other. If your team, if your club is playing, then the fans should be getting behind that. And it is different, and it's, again, like Dave said, it's not a criticism, but it's interesting to see it firsthand, because I also think there's a lot of issues with the culture of football fandom in Europe. The sort of access to the sort of aren't the accountability to the ultras seems a little bit to cross a line, personally, for me. Definitely no disrespect to the ultras, by the way, in case you are listening. But yeah, what I would say is, if you do get the chance to get abroad to take in a game or to watch football in a different environment, do it, because it is different, and it does potentially make you look at things in a slightly different way. But above all, it's fun, and supporting Supporting a football team should be fun. Having a hobby like being a football fan should be fun. And yeah, we've had lots of it this weekend.
Plenty of love and understanding now of Stockholm. Of course, Watford have got an away game. I don't think it's a TIFO display at Swansea on Tuesday or anything like that. But we'll be back at home at Vicarage Road next Saturday when Watford take on Millwall. Thank you very much, David.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks to you guys for your company this weekend. And thanks to the good people of Stockholm for being magnificent hosts.
Yeah. One of us should have really learned how to say thank you in Swedish by now.
Tack.
Tack.
There we go. Come on, you horns.